You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferrat.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up, we'll talk about the Wisconsin primary, a lawsuit against the State Department of Justice, and more in our Wisconsin News Roundup.
First, in an age where if you have a craving for a certain food, you can hop online and search for a local restaurant. Or if you're feeling really gung-ho, you can search for a recipe to cook online.
But before the internet, cooks had only one resource, the cookbook.
Beyond their use in the kitchen, historical cookbooks are also time capsules of recipes long gone or food traditions that have fallen out of favor.
On this week's edition of Food Friday, our guest has spent decades preserving American culinary history through her lifelong passion of collecting cookbooks.
Jan Longoni is the adjunct curator of culinary history in special collections at the University of Michigan. Jan, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you very much.
Well, you are legendary, I think we could say, in terms of your ability to find and collect these interesting cookbooks. But how did you get started?
Yes, well, it's a long story. My mother said I was born reading a book, and I believe that that's correct. And when I was 5 years old, I wanted to get a library card so I could read more books, and I was not allowed to in Boston, where I grew up. Because you had to be able to cross the street yourself. So I evidently threw a tantrum, and they gave me a library card. And now, I don't know if this story is true. That's my urban legend, okay? And I just started reading, but I didn't read cookbooks. I actually read everything else. And then when I was in graduate school, I'm jumping around now, okay? When I was in graduate school at Cornell, I was lucky enough to be involved with a Ford Foundation group who had brought Sputnik had just gone up, and Americans really were very nervous about to go to the world. And they decided that Ford would give money to bring people from all over the world who might be future leaders in every country in the world. And they came to Cornell, and I worked with them, and we would get together every month or so, and people would cook something. And it was always fascinating to me to hear the Northern Indian people say, well, that's not how we make it, you know. And then when they came back to my little apartment, I would say, well, what would you like me to make? I don't know. You know, maybe you have strictures or something. And they said, typical American meal. I didn't know what that was. I grew up in Boston in a Jewish household, and so I went to the library at Cornell, which of course had everything, and I started to get into culinary history. And then very shortly after, my husband and I started traveling in Europe under Fulbrights or scholarships and things of that nature. Every place we went, we just decided to learn more about the culinary history. You know, they always wanted to know what to do with me. Well, it was my husband who was the one they wanted. And finally, I just learned a great deal. And so when we came back here to Ann Arbor, the university asked if we wouldn't like to give some classes on culinary history. And I thought, well, that's an interesting idea. Let me see what I can put together.
And you had a lot of cookbooks by that point, because you had been, it sounds like, scouring bookstores, antiquarian sites in Europe to find cookbooks. What are some of the most remarkable early ones that you found?
Well, it was not only in America, but also we traveled all over, I mean, in Europe and in Turkey and in North Africa and stuff. But actually, what I should tell you is that, would you ask the question again, please?
Oh, sure. Tell us about some of the books that you found, because you started collecting them and you even started selling them. Which ones stick out to you?
Well, I should tell you that when I started buying cookbooks, scouting, love, having a wonderful time doing that, we spent all of our vacations looking at old books. We loved all sorts of old books. And I discovered I had been buying 3 copies of a book. And I thought, well, this is strange. Why am I buying 3 copies? And I say, my mind had made up its mind for me to open a bookshop. I didn't know that until I suddenly looked and I thought, what are all these books doing here? And so I started an antiquarian bookshop called the Wine and Food Library. It's one really of the first few in America. In fact, I tell people, you'll forgive me for this, but that They tell me I'm the oldest living culinary antiquarian culinary book dealer in the world.
Wow.
And I don't know if that's true. And some days I think that's a compliment, and some days I wish they wouldn't say it. But so I've had so many books pass through my hands, and if you'll forgive me for jumping ahead and not quite answering your question, I have handled books from 1506 to books that are going to come tomorrow in the mail, okay? Everything between. And my husband, who is an emeritus professor of organic chemistry, shares the passion of studying food and wine and old books. And so we just have done nothing but that, really, for 61 years we've been married. And it's been a wonderful life for us. So we have seen all kinds of books. And you asked a question that is in my mind, because I've just been asked, along with many other people, to choose the 10 most important, no, most interesting books I think need to be made into a facsimile or shown for people. Someone is trying to do something called 1,000 books, and they've asked all sorts of people to give 10 books. Well, I have not been able to decide which 10 books
hard to pick.
I want to give them. But since I really was featuring, when I started all of this, I really was not interested in American cookbook history. I was very interested in French history, French gastronomy. But very soon, a man named Alan Davidson, who was a founder of modern culinary history, asked me if I would come to Oxford University in England and speak on the history of American cookbooks. And I remember saying, Alan, I don't know anything about American cookbooks. I'm not interested. Why don't you ask me to speak about French cookbooks? And he said, Jan, anyone can talk about French cookbooks, but not very many people can talk about American. So I want you to come and speak at Oxford at a symposium. So I said, I can't do it. I'm not prepared to do it, and I won't give a talk unless I'm prepared. So he said, okay, I'm going to give you 3 days, and I want you to decide who else could do it but you. By this time, I had had the bookshop for many years, and I had made many contacts. I mean, every important chef in America, every winemaker, every cheesemaker, you know, they all were customers in my bookshop, which was such a lucky thing for me. It was wonderful. And I'm jumping around, but anyway, so I went,
I'm going to jump in for a second and let people know we're listening to Jan Longoni. She is known as America's foremost culinary historian, a collector of American cookbooks. And Jan, I want to get into some specific pieces of American history here. I understand among the books that you've collected at the University of Michigan now, the first known cookbook written by an African-American woman in the country. Yes. What is it like to discover, to get your hands on something like that?
Well, yes, that's one of my most favorite books, and I would be more than happy to talk about it. For many years, people thought the first African-American cookbook was written by a woman named Mrs. Fisher, and it was called What Mrs. Fisher Knows About Old Southern Cooking. Mrs. Fisher, we believe, was a slave, and after the Civil War, she moved with her family to California, and there she became, she started to cook, cook and make things and work with the highest class of people in Oakland and San Francisco. And they asked her to write a cookbook, which, did I say that, was called What Mrs. Fisher Knows About Old Southern Cooking. And everyone thought that was the first black authored cookbook by a woman. And one day I was in Boston. My mother was ill. And my husband called me up. He said, Jan, what do you know about a black authored cookbook from Michigan from 1866? And I said, there is no such thing. It's no, we've seen it all these years. We've seen thousands and thousands and thousands of books. He said, well, someone just called and wanted you to tell her about it. So I said, well, why don't you tell her to send it to us and we'll look and decide. I just can't believe that there's an 1866 cookbook written by a black American. So when I got back in town, we waited, and I said, we'd send the book. So we got the book, and we opened it up, and I took a look at it, and I thought, my God, this is 15 or more years before Mrs. Fisher by a woman named Melinda, M-A-L-I-N-D-A, Melinda Russell. And Melinda was a free woman of color because her mother was a free woman of color because her grandmother was made free in Virginia. And Melinda was an unbelievable person. I say she's an indomitable spirit. And I also say what she is an African-American story and an American story. So anyway, so she started doing cooking in Tennessee, where she was born. And then she worked in various parts of Tennessee. And then she owned a bakery. And during the Civil War, she was so pro-union that men in masks and guns came to her and said, "You better get out of the South." So she was forced out of the South, and she lost all her money, everything. She lost everything. I forgot to say, she started to go to Liberia in the Back to Africa movement, and someone robbed her. She got married. Her husband died young, and she had a child who was born, quote, handicapped. So they matched her out of Tennessee, and she heard that Michigan was the garden of the world, and she ended up in Paw Paw, Michigan.
Wow, what a story, and I know that's just one of the many that you've got there. We're talking right now with Jan Longoni. She's the adjunct curator of culinary history and special collections at the University of Michigan. We're talking with her for our Food Friday today and talking about how a passion for cookbooks turned into a lifelong journey to preserve American culinary history.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you a fan of older American cookbooks? Are these an important part of our history, maybe an important part of your family history? Do you have a treasured cookbook that's been handed down through the generations? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're continuing our conversation with Jan Longoni on this Food Friday. She's the adjunct curator of culinary history and special collections at the University of Michigan.
And she's a historical cookbook collector extraordinaire. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a favorite classic cookbook, or maybe a question about one? Do you have a cookbook that's been handed through the generations in your family? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we'll take a call now for Jan. We've got Russ on the line in Monroe. Russ, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, thanks.
I've been collecting cookbooks my whole life since I started getting interested in cooking. I'm currently a chef owner of a little restaurant my wife and I run, but I always like to say that I learned cooking because I was never formally trained through the cookbooks I collected, and then the television programs like Julia Child and all those going way back. But I've got love Jacques Pepin, and I've got a copy of his first edition of La Technique, which was a big book he produced that was had lots of black and white photos on how to debone a chicken and cut an onion. But it's really a great book. I also have there's a guy from the 80s, the Frugal Gourmet, Jeff Smith, out of Washington State. Really great guy. I think he kind of died dishonored for something, I don't know. But his books were so spot on in the recipes, and they're always my favorite, and I still go back to them to this day. His one book, The Cuisine of the Three Great Dynasties, I think China, Rome, and Greece, has just some amazing, great recipes that, like I said, and I actually use some of the recipes in my restaurant today.
Oh, fabulous, Russ. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. Someone who shares your passion there, Jan. Do you have any brief thoughts about the cookbooks that he mentioned there?
Yes, I do. I wish I could go to his restaurant. That would be very nice. So, but people really relate to the cookbooks, and they relate to the ones that belonged to their families, that were handed down in the family. But they just really care about the books, and it's quite remarkable. And as I say, our archive at the university, which is called the Janice Bluestein Longoni Culinary Archive, that archive has, 40,000 books now that we have donated. And they go back to the 16th century, but of course there are many more modern ones than that, and they're from all cultures, but mostly American.
And Jan, you shared a recipe with us with some history behind it, the David Eyre pancake. We've got that up on the Central Time Facebook page. What's the story behind this pancake recipe?
Well, I think I first found it maybe in a book by, I'm sorry.
Well, that's okay, but a little of significance,
Times,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. New York Times food editor, and it's called David, I think it's called David Iyer. And it's one of these things that it takes 10 minutes to do, and it's delicious, and everybody likes it. But recently I was asked to send a recipe, Craig Claiborne, okay? Craig Claiborne. Recently I was asked to send a card with my favorite recipe to a great niece who's getting married in a few weeks. And I thought, what can I make? I don't know her too well, and it would be nice. So I'll send her the David Iyer, which I did. The David Iyer that I sent you the recipe for is a sweet one. You finish it off with butter and sugar. But my husband and I prefer savory things. So what we do is we use Parmesan instead of sugar.
Oh, that's a good way to go. Yes. This is one of these big puffy sort of German-style Pannkuchen sorts of things, right? It's
exactly.
A puffy pancake.
Yes, and it's so easy to make. And all you need are if you use two eggs, I think that's right, yes, two eggs, you can feed two people for a light lunch. And I recommend it highly. And the second one, do you want me to talk about that
one? Sure, yes, some Parmesan shortbread or something.
It's a Parmesan shortbread, and this comes from, I think, Bon Appetit or Food and Wine, I can't remember. And it's they're absolutely wonderful if you're having company over and you want something that you can cook in advance, make it or bake in advance. And this simply is a shortbread, and you can put, this is with Parmesan, but we have had it with Parmesan, we've had it with rosemary, we've had it with blue cheese, you know, whatever you want, and everyone likes it. And I've never been to a wine tasting, and I go to many that people have and said, can I have the recipe? Can I have the recipe? So that was why I gave you that as the second one.
And we've got both of those recipes. You can have that recipe at the Central Time Facebook page. I want to bring another caller on, Jan. We've got Jean on the line in Appleton. Jean, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to tell us about?
Virtually certain she must have a copy of the Victory Cookbook, Wartime Edition.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
My favorite.
It has 816 pages and even tells you how to buy food. And at the end, there's a supplement on how to feed a family of five on $15 a week.
Jean, thanks. And I bet there's a lot of history there of wartime ration-ready cookbooks, Jan.
Yes. Just to tell you, yes, I know that book very well, but I can tell you we also have from the 1890s books called How to Feed a Family of Six on 15 cents a day.
Oh, boy. It's a different time.
Yeah, a different time.
So these cookbooks really are a window to the past. Do you feel like it is possible to know people really well and really fully through the food that they eat?
Yes, I think so. I think so. And I think, in America we still have some kind of fear of food. I think not now. It's changed maybe in the last 15 years. And we were afraid to use butter. There's a book out to teach Italians. Good ladies who were doing charity cookbooks said, my God, they're using olive oil. They better use butter instead. But we're not afraid of these things, and we're not afraid to try things. And I don't know about, I'm sure in your campuses, too, in Wisconsin, the students are getting so very interested. They're doing farm gardens. They're doing helping poor people with their food, feeding people. You know, it's just so exciting and interesting to me that all of this has happened. When I started the bookshop, which was, you know, 1972, I mean, there weren't a lot of people who were collecting cookbooks or who were really interested in the subject. And it took years and years and years before we could get academia to say, this is a subject worth studying. And there are famous chefs now who are teaching at Harvard University. And all over the country, they're talking about food. And part of it is because we're worried about agriculture. We're worried about... After the First World War, the American government discovered that so many people could not be accepted as soldiers because they were not in good health. They weren't eating right, they weren't exercising properly, etc. So that's when we started to really talk about food and what is food. And there's just so much happening, and it's a thrill to be involved in the food world. Let's put it that way.
Well, it's a wonderful story you've shared with us, Jan. Thank you so much for sharing these historical cookbooks with us today.
Thank you very much for asking me.
That's Jan Longoni. She's the Adjunct Curator of American Culinary History and Special Collections at the University of Michigan's Hatcher Library. She joins us to talk about her work really preserving a big part of American history, culinary history, through cookbooks. And by the way, she shared a couple of her favorite recipes. We've got those, the pancakes and the Parmesan shortbreads. You can find both of those at the Central Time Facebook page. Older recipes, but I'm sure they're still really good.
Right. I think I'm going to try that, David. Pancake.
Oh, yeah, me too.
It sounds delicious.
Sounds like and Finnish pancakes,
kind of. It's something
kinda
cool thinking about it, a recipe from history, too.
Definitely. Eat a piece of history.
This is Central Time.